The most interactive sports talk show in Houston continues now.
What's happening, Paul?
What's up, Paul?
Most interactive show, and I really enjoy that aspect of it. Y'all keep it up.
Get involved in the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776. Here's Paul Gallant.
And joining us right now on the HR&P guest line, a former baseball player who worked in the front office of the Minnesota Twins, the Milwaukee Brewers, and Seattle Mariners. Now he's on KHOU as their baseball analyst, Jeremy Booth. Jeremy, what's going on, bud?
Hey, Paul, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. It's great to hear your voice again. What are your thoughts on the Astros hiring Dana Brown as their general manager?
You know what? I've known Dana 15 years, and I will tell you this. He's an excellent evaluator. He is he's a leader. He's a go-getter. He's a grinder. I mean, he's everything you would want to see in a baseball man who understands the new modeling in the game as well as the traditions that have served us for 150 years now. And he's going to go into this situation with the Astros to aggressively retool some of the things they need to get done. It's a good hire. It's an aggressive hire. It's a change in direction. I think everybody can see that. It's a 180 from the past, and it's something to look forward to.
Having known him for 15 years, how do you think he'll get along with a rather hands-on seeming Jim Crane and also with a guy who seems to have a rather loud voice in the front office, for better or worse, Jeff Bagwell?
Well, I don't think Dana's going to be any stranger to big personalities. I think that, the game that we're used to, meaning the game as before it shifted more towards, analysts is almost exclusive. Was full of big personalities, right? I mean, it's Biggio and it's Bagwell and it's Reggie Jackson and it's Jim Crane and it's, and Dan himself is a big personality. So I think he's going to understand where those guys are coming from. And I certainly think he's going to appreciate their input. Where he's going to be able to plug those guys in, dynamics are always changing and there are always things that have to mesh and things that won't mesh. But at the end of the day, that school of thought is usually able to get into a room, talk things through, come out as a unit, even if they disagree, with a unified direction.
What I'm curious about, Jeremy, and Jeremy Booth of KHOU baseball analyst who's served in several front offices across baseball, what I'm curious about is when it comes to Dana Brown, okay, it's what makes a good GM hire? Because we've seen the qualifications that he has and some of the things that he was able to do specifically in Atlanta when it comes to some of the players that he helped with the scouting of Michael Harris, last year's Rookie of the Year, Spencer Strider, Vaughn Grissom. Those things are great. Obviously, though, being a general manager is more than that. So a very general question, Jeremy, what is it that makes a good general manager? Because it seems like as far as hiring a guy to do a job like that, it's maybe the one where you have the least to go off of to determine someone's qualifications. You could be around an organization that's been good for a long period of time, but you might go from that organization, say, in what we had here with James Click just a little bit ago, to another one, and it doesn't work out the same way.
Yeah, first of all, I'm going to say this to you, man. That's one of the better takes that I've heard on this since Dana's been fired. That's hired. That's fair. That's accurate. That is direct. Dana has his own track record, right? He's got stuff with the Nationals. He's got stuff with the Expos. He's got stuff with the Braves. But his success is good enough for his qualifications. There's a great point that you just made about being around a good organization. And Dana's been a very valuable part of the Atlanta Braves since he got there. He's only been there 4 years. And you can't turn around an organization in full in 4 years. You saw that here in Houston with Bobby Heck and Ed Wade and what they did and left for Luno's group, right? What they did at the big league level and then what Click was able to do by steering them through some very tough waters. So that's really well said. We don't need to revise any part of that. With that in mind, being a good GM is about leadership. It's about vision and player development. It's about vision and scouting. It's about making sure those two departments talk to each other. It's about finding people underneath you that will keep up with you and your pace. It is about listening to different voices. It is about understanding waiver claims and roster additions and additions to the big league club and what you can do for depth in the system. It is about understanding ownership and budgets and the fact that we all got to remember it's still a business, right? It's still a business of baseball. It's having vision long term to understand the analytics of who you're going to be able to sign and why you want to have those guys as parts of your club, as well as keeping an eye on all 29 other clubs besides your own to make sure that new pieces are coming up, you know, you can be competitive in that market and having a fallback plan to A, B, C, and D. And what I will say for Dana is that in scouting, in the drafts, and in building stuff with free agent acquisitions, which he was definitely a part of that in Atlanta and in Washington and Toronto, you know, he's going to have that background tied together. What remains to be seen is what he's going to do without being the guy that runs the draft. The GM is not the one that runs the draft. I'll go on record. Paul, you've heard me say this before. Mm-hmm. They need an overhaul in the scouting department. And I know, you know, for Astros fans, that can be tough to hear because the big league level's been good, so good for so long. But that's what good drafting and development can do. And up to about 2015, they did a good job, you know, with most of that. After that, it's been kind of quiet. But you see the results at the big league levels. We forget that, you know, with Jim Crane identifying Dana. And a couple other candidates, Michael Hill, Bobby Evans, who are in the mix that could do those types of things, they correctly are addressing needs underneath it that Dana can come in and put his hands on as the GM right now. Not a whole lot to do with the big league club. That's more kind of a learn on the fly, get the personnel, understand what you have, get to, you know, work with Dusty, work with the staff, have a vision for the future. But Dana's job is to come in and retool scouting and player development. There's no question about it. He'll be able to do that just fine.
KHOU's baseball analyst Jeremy Booth with us, with front office experience in Minnesota, Milwaukee, and in Seattle. So delegation, based off of what you just said, is going to be key. And I imagine there are some guys that are working in the scouting department that, with Dana Brown now in, Jeremy, would end up getting the boot. Delegation's got to be interesting because he's going to have to hire the right guy. So that almost becomes his biggest priority right now as far as maybe retooling that, right?
Yeah, you're dead on again. I mean, the thing with the Houston Astros is that they have the smallest baseball operations department in baseball, and it's not really close. They've run for a while on not having a pro scouting department, right? They've had limited international influence since Valdez and Javier and that run of players. You have a draft that have not yielded a whole lot since 2012, to be honest with you, at the top. You know, we go down the picks and you got Mark Capel in 13 and Brady Aiken in 14, which didn't work. That turns into Bregman, right? And you keep going down the list. And there's not a whole lot of guys that they've had success on at the top of the draft. You know, and that's honestly, that's due to not having the scouts to be able to get it done. And when you have the scouts in place to get it done, and you turn around and you don't.
I don't you hate when a call comes in when you're in the middle of something? Anyway, sorry, Jeremy, continue.
I guess it's a busy day. When you have that type of lack of personnel, right, mm-hmm. and you're looking more towards an analytical one-way tilt, it's going to be hard to get deeper on these players to be able to acquire. So some of that's not necessarily on the staff that's in place. They're a little bit overmatched with what they've been asked to do. But then again, the other side of that is who they've got in there in some cases. And you can't indict one person when it comes to this. It becomes more of a collection. So his biggest task is going to be getting Jim Crane and Jeff Bagwell and DiGio and the group that's there. But really Jim Crane to understand, look, we got to open the books here a little bit. We got to go hire some people in player development to lead that. We're going to go hire some people in pro scouting to build that. We're going to go hire somebody in amateur scouting to lead this change of direction, right? And that's going to be the biggest part of stuff he's going to have to do. If Jim Crane's willing to open the books and open up the checkbook and allow people to come in, he will have quite a bit of a hybrid scouting force and player development force that can work together. A lot of guys want to be aggressive under Dana Brown. So if Dana can get Jim Crane to expand that baseball operations staff beyond the analysts, which is going to mean not just addition, but subtraction, right? You have to replace some of the people that are there. And frankly, some people there are going to have to go. So it works. They have a chance to do some really good things for quite some time.
Jeremy Booth with us. He's got international scouting experience. And I know that the Houston Astros, as you just said, they're going to have to be looking to retool some of that. He's worked with the Twins, the Brewers, and the Mariners. He's at KHOU as their baseball analyst. So we know that I think everyone is kind of concerned that, hey, maybe they're not going to be as good at, for lack of a better term, reading the Caribbean with all the great prospects that they have found there over the years. But also the big, I would imagine, obstacle for the Astros in the near future is going to be contract negotiations. When you take a look at Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman's contracts, which aren't that far away from expiring. And, of course, Kyle Tucker's massive contract extension that you imagine he could get either here or elsewhere. Is Brown going to be in charge of, based off of, you know, what you know about front offices? Because obviously behind the scenes, we don't know 100% the details, but is the general manager the one that negotiates with agents of players, or does it end up being sort of a group conversation where Jim Crane would be involved or maybe some others would be involved?
You know, so GM's going to lead it. And, you know, I can take you back to a situation that'll kind of answer what we're really discussing when it comes to contract extensions or free agent additions, right, to the major roster. In 2014, Seattle signed Robinson Cano. And now, at the end of the career, it wasn't a great contract the last couple of years, but then it was a pretty good deal as far as what we were going to get for the first 5 or 6 years. When it comes down to pieces, Cano by himself, while being the biggest addition, wasn't enough to put us over the hump, right? Mm-hmm. And the next piece we were going to go add was Nelson Cruz, which is still playing. It would have been a pretty good sign, right?
Yeah.
Ownership decided they were going to kill that. Now, you couldn't say that in the media, but ownership said, you know what? We're not going to let you sign Nelson Cruz. So the team can only go as far as the owner who is writing the check is allowed to do. Now, Jim Crane has shown an amazing willingness to keep a high payroll as long as they're going to be competitive and win games. But that said, you can't pay guys $25 million a position. And when you have Altuve coming up, as you said, Bregman coming up, I believe those are both after 24. I want to say McCullers is after 26, which, okay, right? Abreu is signed through 25, right? So you got a window here where these guys can all kind of stay together. Bregman's going to get paid again as well he should. You've got Tucker, who you correctly said is probably going to get one of the bigger deals out there with what he's been able to return himself into at the big league level. You got Jeremy Peña, who while just got there, is only under control until 2028, I believe, and he's going to need to be able to be extended. He deserves to play every day for a long time. You've got Valdez and Javier, and so you have some decisions that have to be made. Ultimately, those are going to be ownership-level decisions. Dan is going to do his work with what that means within a budget. You know, look at long-term numbers. They'll do a lot of subjective scouting and being around these guys makeup-wise and what their habits are off the field and who to keep, who not to keep, and how you put that together. And then eventually you'll see a roster take shape. When it comes to that type of money, though, if you just add those 5 or 6 guys together, you're at $150 million. Mm. And we can't forget, you know, Jordan Alvarez, right? Who can't really, if you're the Astros, that's one of the best bats in baseball. He didn't go anywhere. So you look at that type of group, and you can't keep all of them, so you really need to have that system underneath so you can turn around and negotiate Tucker and Peña and whoever else you need to keep in-house from a position of strength instead of weakness.
Jeremy, this has all been great stuff. Jeremy Booth is the KHOU baseball analyst, and I'm sure you'll be able to catch him this weekend on Sports Extra talking about this hire, which you can catch Sunday nights on KHOU. Jeremy, thank you so much for your time. Also, I got a cackle hearing about the Mariners ownership situation and, you know, how maybe they are a little bit penny pinching. It's someone who was working up there. Yeah, I've heard some of the same things. Sorry you had to deal with that, dude.
You know what, man? Seattle's a great city, but I love my home in Houston.
Hell, how's that? Yeah, I love that. All right, Jeremy, appreciate it, man. Let's do it again soon.
All right, Paul, be safe.
That is Jeremy Booth, everybody. Jeremy's awesome. Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We'll react to some of what Jeremy had to say about the Astros hiring Dana Booth as their general manager. And it's a good thing that the Houston Astros aren't working with these guys because a bunch of organizations are about to be royally bleeped. I'll tell you who next. Paul Galancho.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. Locked in with the Paul Galancho.
You're locked in here with me.
Please send help from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant.
Paul Galancho, the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Big thanks to Jeremy Booth for stopping by earlier. A lot of fascinating things about the general manager job that we don't know. Because it's a lot of different things. And as Jeremy said, it's going to be about how Dana Brown delegates to others. I imagine there will be some where he is forced to delegate with them. That's what happens when you get hired into a new organization. You don't just get to fire everybody. So he's going to have to establish working relationships with people that maybe don't see eye to eye with him from a scouting perspective. And then from a negotiating contracts perspective, he's also going to have to work on that. And that's probably the area where you look at him and you say, okay, you've done scouting before, but this is a totally different kind of world. So a texter brings up, he may be okay, but there's more to being a GM than being a good talent evaluator. How is he at negotiations? I 100% agree. Does he have strong relationships with agents across baseball? He's going to have to create them. He's going to have to kiss ass to Scott Boras from time to time, which sucks. But that's sort of the way it goes. He is the biggest power broker in the sport. I'm really curious to see how it'll work out. And look, the hire on paper, it's fantastic. But the James Click hire was a good one too, especially in the wake of all the scandal that the Astros were facing. And ultimately, that wasn't what Jim Crane wanted. Whether or not it was successful, I think that's debatable. But I think also at the trade deadline this past year, you could make a strong argument that James Click failed. Trey Mancini didn't do anything for you. Christian Vasquez didn't play much. He was probably the best acquisition that you made. And Will Smith didn't pitch for you at all in the postseason. So, I mean, that's what he contributed. Now, he also did, I would imagine, spearhead the Yordan Alvarez extension, which deserves a lot of credit. But you can have a great resume. It's all about what you do afterwards. And anyone can fake a resume. But in the good news is for Dana Brown, like, the resume's there, and it's clear as day, and it's maybe not written in stone, but it's written in something pretty strong. That's for damn sure. 713-780-3776 to call and to text in too. You can also tweet at Gallant Says at Sean A. Mapes, twitch.tv/ESPN975. And the question of today's show, why won't the hiring of Dana Brown by the Houston Astros as general manager work out? This is a very fascinating story that is going to hurt a lot of teams across baseball. And not the Houston Astros, but it does remind me of a time back in the day. We will get to that in a moment. Culminating perhaps the biggest financial disaster in sports media history, Diamond Sports Group, the heavily indebted subsidiary that manages Sinclair Broadcast Group's Bally Sports branded regional sports networks, is heading for bankruptcy. You guys may remember Fox Sports Southwest back in the day, right? I mean, that was where the Astros and the Rockets broadcasted their games. And then CSN Houston came in, a lot of money behind it, awesome studios downtown, programming essentially all day. It did make Houston feel like a big league city from a sports perspective. Unfortunately, especially for the Houston Astros, this was a network that was never carried throughout all of town because people who had Dish TV, or was it Dish Network, you couldn't get it on Dish Network. I'm not sure if it was on Sirius, or not Sirius, what is it? DirecTV. I'm not sure if it was on DirecTV either. I know you could get it on cable, but a lot of the city could not get Astros games at a time when the Astros stunk. Now, did it hurt the Astros in the long run? No. But say the Astros were good during that period of time, and they have a network that's airing the games that no one can see across all of the town, that could have hurt them. Well, imagine you're one of these teams, and all of a sudden, you're realizing that the deal that you made with a regional sports network, which is going to give you a lot of your resume, is kind of screwed because this network needs a bailing out, and they're hoping that teams are going to actually end up doing it. That will affect your budgeting. Take an example, the St. Louis Cardinals. So the Cardinals had the highest local broadcast ratings in 2022. But the popularity of said team, because they are on Bally Sports Network, they're going to have to foot probably a lot of this. MLB owners would feel the repercussions, writes the New York Post, of losing television contracts, and the Cardinals are likely to be hit the hardest given the uniquely large chunk of revenue that comes from television viewership. The slice in payroll will almost certainly lead the Cardinals to be more stringent in spending, and they might not pursue players they would have otherwise considered. Oh, you hate to see it. I know a lot of people from the mid-2000s remembering that rivalry with the Cardinals are like, Anyway, it continues. Any necessary moves, such as the team's sorely needed upgrades to its 2024 starting rotation, might not be to the levels fans expect. But it's fine. They have the best fans in baseball. You know, they'll be okay with it. We're gung-ho. We're from the Midwest. Whatever our team does, we'll show up. We're the Rooters. We show up every single week, and we drink our Bud Light. By the way, if we're going to do power rankings, can we talk about something for a second? And I know I don't have any beer sponsorship, even though I can drink everybody at the station under the table. It's fine. I'm not bitter about it at all. Can we talk about the three major light beers for just a second? Sean Mapes is laughing his ass off. No, Sean, this is a serious conversation I'm about to have.
I was just prepping sound for later in the show. I knew you were talking Bally's. I wasn't 100% listening. And then all of a sudden, can we talk about the, like, in a serious, like, it's the biggest issue in the nation.
It's a Friday, and this is important. Look, guys. Miller Lite is God's gift to Earth. I am Team Miller till I die. I also enjoy a good Coors Light from time to time. And I gotta say, having been in Colorado last weekend, it legitimately tasted different. It was so refreshing. It was so cold. And there was nothing quite like leaving a six-pack of Coors Light in... Oh, John Granato, I'm coming for you, baby. There's nothing quite like leaving a six-pack of Coors Light in the garage when it's like 18 degrees outside and it's still cold when you get back from a long day on the slopes. And then you got Bud Light. That's all I got to say about it. There's a distinct aftertaste with Bud Light that I do not like. Beer man Greg, who I believe is a
expert in the field.
Says, what's wrong with Bud Light? Miller Light tastes like piss. Listen, some of us have refined palates from days, months, years of binge drinking. And I mean, there's a pretty big discrepancy between the beer that also has a champagne of beers and Bud Light. But look, whatever. To each their own. USA. USA. We can all have different opinions. Anyway, back to the Bally Sports Media Network.
Thank you. Back
what?
To this.
I'm sorry. This is a tangent. It's a Friday. I mean, you know what I'm going to do after the show? Although I actually have some Montucky cold snacks back in the place. Montucky. Fantastic stuff. Here are the teams that are going to be affected by this with the bankruptcy and Bally Sports Network. The Diamondbacks, the Tigers, the Marlins, the Guardians. Now, that's a concern. The Royals. A lot of these teams thus far suck. The Cardinals, the Twins. Uh-oh. The Reds, they stink. The Padres, that's not going to affect them. They got a deep wallet. The Angels, not going to affect them as much. Deep wallet. But in some way, I would imagine it would affect those teams. The Braves, the Rangers. Oh, you hate to see it. Poor Rangers. The Rays and the Brewers. That's a lot of teams. That is a lot of teams. Let me do my math here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Holy crap. Almost half of baseball.
I was going to say, I just eyeball him. Like, that's half the team.
Oh, my God. Listen, just be thankful. And I think that the A&T Sportsnet Southwest team does a great job. We obviously love Vanessa Richardson on the Rockets broadcast. She is our sister. But we also, you know, love what we have gotten from Todd Callis and from Jeff Blum and Kevin Eschenfelder and Julia Morales and everybody else on the AT&T Sportsnet Southwest team. Shout out to Ryan Hollins and shout out to Craig Ackerman too. It's a good team. They do a good job. And thank God that they are not owned by Bally Sports Network, because first off, some of those guys might get laid off just rando style. And on top of that, we've dealt with this before. And imagine if the Astros all of a sudden got this now. It's not like the Astros have endless budget here. It's a little bit different for them. You know, there's a couple of teams, the Red Sox, I believe the Mets and the Yankees both have a dedicated network for just them. The Yankees have Yes. I think the Mets have SNY. Some of these teams, they have that, but it's not everybody. It's few and far between for like the have nots, if you will.
It's half the league that doesn't.
Seriously. It's crazy. So good news for the Astros, and it gives them a little bit of an edge, perhaps, in the near future. Ball Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Conference championship weekend is upon us. Who is the most him quarterback playing? And which Super Bowl matchup would be the least insufferable? Because we're going to have 2 weeks to talk about it. Ball Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.
Houston's most interactive and possibly radioactive sports talk show continues now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
My takes on beer have created a bit of a firestorm on the text line. 713-780-3776. Miller is the worst of the lights. It's offensive the whole way through. Do a blind taste test, and I 100% promise you that you won't get any right. I know I would get Miller Lite right, and I think I would get Bud Light right. I think Coors is maybe where I could get a little bit confusing. But I noticed the difference between the two, and I prefer Miller Lite. You gotta, you know, some people like the Backstreet Boys. Some people like NSYNC. Some people like Tupac. Some people like Notorious B.I.G. Some people like the United States of America. Other people like communism. You know? Those latter people are the biggest losers of all, because I don't even think they get to drink beer. They just got to drink vodka.
Yes, we don't invade Ukraine. Vodka is all we have. Vodka is all I know. We must spread their vodka preserves.
I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with there. But yeah, we could go all day on the beers, but it is a sports show. You know, it's conference championship weekend. Joe Burrow, perhaps the second coming of Tom Brady, confident at one point during the game against the Buffalo Bills, was saying, or at least caught on camera saying, I am him, which is the thing that people are saying these days. Essentially, it's the new, I'm the man. I am him. He is him. He's the man. I don't know why it became a thing. It's kind of stupid, in my opinion, but whatever. You got to embrace the lexicon and go with it. Otherwise, you're going to seem like an old fuddy-duddy boomer. No offense to the boomers out there, but you got to adapt. You got to lie to yourself. You got to shave your beard and mustache off that's got gray hairs in it, like I've done, to pretend you're in your 20s again. Midlife crisis. Hashtag it happens to all of us. Joe Burrow was asked about saying, I'm him, at a press conference this week.
Joe, the mic caught you last game screaming that you're him. What is saying I'm him?
Did I say that? Sometimes you black out there, I guess. I don't know.
So my question is, who is the most him quarterback left? I got a couple of options here. First off, you got Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes is the best quarterback in the game. And Mahomes getting back into that game and getting pissed off with Andy Reid, who was saying, hey, you got a high ankle sprain at least, dude. You got to go to this locker room and get it looked at. Mahomes coming back into that game and playing on a half leg. Infinite respect for him. I've always enjoyed how mobile Mahomes is when it comes to extending plays, but I always used to get annoyed that nobody... It seemed like always people would let up when they hit him, except for that one guy in the Cleveland Browns in the playoffs a couple of years ago that knocked him out of the game. That was the last time we saw Chad Henne. But I've always felt like when Mahomes is scrambling, it looks like Vladimir Putin playing hockey with a bunch of Russians where no one wants to touch him. But they all do. It's just he's just quick enough. He's not like Kyler Murray quick, but he's just quick enough to generally avoid contact. He's like a better version of when Aaron Rodgers was in his prime when it comes to like moving around and rolling around outside the pocket and all that. I'm curious as to how he's going to look against this Bengals defense, which has thrown new looks at him every single time with that messed up ankle, if he's going to be 100%. Mahomes did get asked about his ankle, and here's what he had to say. I think this was from Wednesday. Here's Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I thought I had a good day yesterday. Obviously, it's things you had to work through here and there. But overall, probably better than I expected, being able to go out there and throw the football around and get the reps in that I needed to get in.
Here's the problem with Patrick Mahomes as being a him. You just heard it. He sounds like Kermit the Frog. You can't control that. You know, I got a nasally, sometimes annoying sounding voice. I'm sure it's driven a ton of people off from this show before they understood what it is, before you got it. You have Joe Burrow. I mean, Joe Burrow is wearing like white turtlenecks and mink coats and stuff. Essentially, Joe Namathing his way through everything. But you also have Jalen Hurts, who has been compared by some to Michael Jordan. And specifically, I'm talking about Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni. Sirianni was asked about that. Sirianni is something else, to put it politely. Here is Nick Sirianni attempting to explain why he made the Michael Jordan comparison earlier this week.
And so when you make that comparison, you think, like, again, when you guys ask me about Jalen, the first thing as good as he's played this year, right, as well as he's run the football, as well as he's thrown the football, reading defenses, accurate throws, as well as he's done all that, what you notice first about him is his will to win, his competitive drive. And so that comparison is kind of in that aspect of it. Like, yeah, again, was I around Michael Jordan? No, but I was able to watch from afar when I was a kid. But then also you're able to watch these documentaries and you see that common denominator of those things. The first thing you asked me about Jalen, I always talk about is all those things, all the intangibles that he has.
My God, it just keeps going. Good God. So Jalen Hurts is not Michael Jordan, and Nick needs to chill a little bit. But I will say this about Jalen Hurts. We talk about Joe Burrow's fashion all the time. Jalen Hurts spent his like first $30,000 on chains, bracelets. He got jeweled up when he first made it to the NFL. And he wears a chain, or he at least wore one chain after taking down the Giants on Saturday night that said breed of one. And Sirianni went a little bit further to talk about it. There's a subtleness to Hurts. And on top of that, I think a physicality with Hurts that I think if you got to pick between the three, Hurts is the most him of these three guys, whatever the hell that means. And I love Joe Burrow. Burrow's my favorite of all these three, and I think Mahomes is the best of all of these three, but I think Jalen Hurts is the most him. I think there's something to be said for like not being a try-hard, and Burrow is venturing into try-hard territory. I will still like him regardless. I love the confidence that he does it, but Hurts is there's a quiet confidence to him, and I feel like that is sorely missed in 2023. I keep on seeing like viral videos of four-year-old kids like playing in intramural sports, like essentially doing the floss dance and dougieing their way up and down the field, and I'm like, good God, kid, get back to work,
get back on defense,
Sean. Yeah,
I think Mahomes has the most him game of the group.
Oh yeah, Mahomes plays it beautifully.
I was watching. It popped up the Bucks players talking about the Super Bowl and just raving about Patrick Mahomes and all the like incomplete passes he was throwing like getting
seriously
out of sacks.
Seriously,
and they won the Super Bowl and they're like, man, Mahomes is crazy.
I remember doing a show the next day and we're all like, wow. I mean, Patrick, his numbers weren't even good, but you're like, but one of the throws he had was incredible and it hit Tyreek Hill right in the face. Pena's got a thought on him quarterbacks. Pena, what's up?
Hey, Paul, just to let you know, real men drink Budweiser.
What, Bud Heavies?
Hey, what was that?
Do you drink Heavies?
Man, that's the only way to drink it, man. Oh, you gotta go hard, dude,
Pena, you've earned some respect. A person who puts down a Heavy, I'm a fan of you. Whether it's the High Life or it's a Bud Heavy, okay. Well, Pena, give us your thought on him quarterbacks.
I'm going to have to go with Jalen Hurts. Like you said, he's a silent killer. He doesn't talk a lot. He lets his play do the talking. And, I mean, he has a nice O-line. But I think he has a nice receiver in A.J. Brown. But I don't think he has the best out of all of them.
Well, he's got Devontae Smith, though,
Pena. Also Kelsey.
I think of all the supporting cast around, and appreciate the phone call, Pena. We haven't mentioned Brock Purdy. No offense to Brock Purdy. No, you don't belong in this conversation.
Least
right
him.
Now.
He's literally Mr. Irrelevant.
Right. He's not there yet. And Brock Purdy, I mean, he's got Christian McCaffrey. He's got Deebo Samuel. He's got Brandon Ayuk. He probably has the most to work with. George Kittle, who, to his credit, he has found a better relationship with Kittle than Garoppolo did, and as far as you know, the actual volume of throws that go his way. Purdy probably has the most to work with. Burrow has the second most to work with. I think Devontae Smith has a lot to work with, too.
Jalen Hurts.
Excuse me.
With Devontae.
Because he has Devontae Smith. Thank you. Jalen Hurts, I mean, Devontae Smith was a bleeping Heisman winner in college, you know? Or did he win the Heisman?
He won the Heisman.
Yeah, he did win the Heisman.
The like 2020.
As a wide receiver, that's really hard to do. Smith is great, and he's the number two wide receiver. A.J. Brown's a beast, and their running backs get slept on. I think Miles Sanders is a very good running back. He's not LeSean McCoy, but, like, you know, if that was probably the best last really good Eagles running back. They used to have Deuce Daly, too. Remember those days?
Brian Westbrook.
They did have Darren Sproles for a little bit, too. Brian Westbrook's a great callback, Sean. Like they've had good running backs, and they've all been kind of in that same kind of mold. But I like Miles Sanders slash Kenneth Gainwell. The big thing is, though, the Eagles' offensive line. That's like, Jalen Hurts has bouncers. Joe Burrow is, like, with a couple of people from the hills of Kentucky, and Max Sharping, former Houston Texan. Like, that's what he's operating with right now. I think Hurts has a lot to work with. I think of all the – Mahomes is working with the least right now. And that offensive line for Kansas City is pretty good, but Mahomes is working with the least. Again, you get to this point, your supporting cast has to be somewhat good. Ryan has a thought on him quarterbacks. Who is the most him quarterback playing this weekend? Ryan, what's up?
Well, I like Joe Burrow, but I had a question. When you say he has the most him game, is that equivalent to he got that dog in him? I was just wondering.
You know what, Ryan? I think it is, and I'd rather hear someone say he is him as opposed to he's got that dog in him. We were doing that with Zach Wilson because he allegedly had sex with one of his mom's friends. That guy sucked. Like, he was never good. He got put up on a pedestal because he had one throw at a pro day. You know what? You know who is him? I am him when it comes to pro day conversations because it's stupid as hell.
I can't wait till March.
Oh my God. I'm going to want to blow my brains out. I really will. Like, look, there are some times a year that are not my favorite. The build up to the draft is not my favorite time. I cannot stand it. So you're going to hear me probably be a little temperamental when it comes to that. So hopefully the Astros, like, do something of note. Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Which Super Bowl matchup is best and which Super Bowl matchup will be most insufferable? Plus a little garbage time. Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to The Paul Gallant Show with Paul Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Featuring Paul Gallant alongside special guest Paul Gallant. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
I love me to me. Quote Terrell Owens. If you're watching on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5, you probably heard a sailor mouth Paul talking about this. Only three people he had blocked on Twitter until last night were I blocked the MLB Network and reported them for misinformation after they did not put Jeremy Pena in the top 10 shortstops in baseball. I've never done that before. It was fun. Also blocked preemptively Phil Sims, ruined many a Sunday on the call with the great Jim Nantz. There's also, remember when he like farted near Jim Nantz?
I was thinking about that when I saw him last week. I was like, I can't believe Jim Nantz, like, it's basically the 07 LeBron team, 07 Cavs, where it's like he had to carry Phil Sims for like 10 years.
He did. You also, and Phil Sims is on the bench all the time. Hmm. Well, I didn't say anything.
Why isn't he with us? Oh, because of this conversation.
Because I blocked him on Twitter. Also blocked Chris Broussard. Chris Broussard once had Leader of Men written in his profile. I just stumbled across some tweet that he said. I wasn't even following him. I just saw that on his profile. I was like, blocked. And Joel Osteen, blocked. Sorry, I don't want your bleep on my timeline, dude. I'm sure you're a nice guy. I don't want to see you.
I'm not sure he's a nice guy. I'll leave it at that.
I'm sure he's a nice guy. Got to watch on Twitch for that. And yeah, now MLB Network has joined that. Super Bowl matchups, the four potential ones. The one I think will happen, I think it's going to be Bengals and Eagles. The Eagles are 2.5-point favorites at home against San Francisco. I've been going back and forth on this all week. I do think Philadelphia, this is the toughest team Philly's played all season long. But, man, their offensive line, their defensive line, they're so good. We're laughing because Nick Sirianni is just being an absolute hardo on the field. I will say, like, there's a clear edge when it comes to Shanahan versus Sirianni, except in weird situations where Shanahan decides to, like, discombobulate himself. Shanahan is good like 98% of the game, but the 2% where he's not, it's a disaster. And there will probably be a moment like that. I think Purdy's going to have a tough day with the waves of Eagles defenders. Christian McCaffrey is going to have to go crazy, I think,
San Francisco to win. And then as far as the game between, why is the spread not at the top? Chiefs are favored by 1 point against the Bengals. That's gone back and forth, back and forth. I think it's really because they're not 100% sure about Patrick Mahomes' angle. Right. It should be, the spread should have changed a massive amount, knowing all the digging that Zach Taylor does looking for motivation. Since Willie Gase said like he's not impressed by the Bengals' offense, Bengals by 10. I think they'll smoke the Chiefs now, entirely because of that. And I'm really very curious to see what Anarumo. It's hard to remember. I don't know why.
You also forgot Pat Mahomes' name. Like,
yeah, shut
30
up.
Seconds
you
ago.
You know what? Whatever. It's almost the weekend. I need to crack open my Miller Lite. Hey, Lou Anarumo has thrown something new at Patrick Mahomes every single time. And I'm curious if there's something else that he has. With Mahomes probably not being as mobile, that's going to be a problem. And the Bengals defensive backs, they're not like great, none of them, but they're all pretty capable. And assuming there's no Eli Apple, stop laughing, Sean. God, that person's always on my mind. He ruined my life.
The next one that you get wrong, I will stop laughing and I will start being worried.
Now I'm actually nervous. I'm about to Kyle Shanahan in the last 4 minutes of the show.
This is the Kyle Shanahan.
Okay.
Run the ball.
The best matchup is also, I think, it's the Bengals and Eagles. I think that's the best matchup because it's new. You got Jalen Hurts in the Super Bowl. You have Joe Burrow back to a Super Bowl, and you got a lot of Nick Sirianni in the build up to the game. I really don't want it to be Eagles Chiefs because I can't deal with an entire Andy Reid like storyline, because I don't want to be reminded about how Philadelphia ran him out of town. Like, they just conveniently forget that. It's absolute BS that they do that too. They ran him out of town. Like, he sucked. He was a great coach.
No matter what, I want, I two parts. I'm kind of done with the Niners. Like, I don't want, or I'm not done with the Niners. I'm done with Brock Purdy. I do not want the 2 week Brock Purdy fellatio.
You're so right. We're both on the same page here.
And
is he the next Tom Brady?
Exactly. Like, get this out of my face.
It'll happen.
And also, the Eagles are fantastic because of our boy, Nick Sirianni, who was playing a certain musical stylings that I feel like you would enjoy at practice.
What do you play?
This is audio from Eagles practice, I think, today.
No way. You're gonna stop me like that?
Oh, that was the Twitter video. That's on.
Oh, let's go there,
Dave
Come
Zangaro.
On, let's go there,
Dave Zangaro. Play the whole song.
Oh my God, that's Dave Zangaro of CSN Houston fame back in the day. I love Dave. Oh, let's go there. Oh, let's go there. My sacrifice. Hold me now. I'm 6 feet from the edge, and I'm thinking I'm Kyle Shanahan. I'm going to poop my pants. Probably going to happen at some point during the game. Oh, man. Yeah, Eagles by 100 now. Playing some Creed? Jeez. 49ers aren't going to know what hit them. All right, real quick garbage time to wrap up the show.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
Garbage.
Starts
the garbage time
now.
Let's go there.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
I want you guys to remember, whenever you bleep talk Cal McNair, at least he is not that guy. James Dolan is threatening to pick a night at the Garden to shut down alcohol sales in response to the New York State Liquor Authority allegedly coming after Dolan about his facial recognition technology that has resulted in bans against lawyers suing him. Dolan is the worst. That's all I got to say. Dolan is actively the worst owner, and he tries to be the worst owner. It's actually become an art for him. Also in garbage time, at AP Stylebook, in a since-deleted tweet, said this: we recommend avoiding general and often dehumanizing the labels, such as the poor, the mentally ill, the French, the disabled, the French, racist, the college-educated. Instead, use wording such as people with mental illnesses.
If I was the French, I'd be so upset. But the French are literally between the mentally ill and disabled. Mm-hmm. Sandwiched in between those, it's the French.
Why didn't they put the Ohio State there instead?
Well, because they like that.
Well, that's what I mean, though, because are a lot of people from Ohio State people who act like they're mentally ill online. I mean,
what you're saying is actually they fall into a lot, except for the French, the Ohio State. They are sometimes college educated, and yeah.
Hmm.
Depends on if they lose, if they're mentally ill.
Hmm. Dr. Dre on 290 on Twitter saying, coming up next, the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Mm. Teach their own, I guess. Sorry you missed out on the fun. I guess he's bitter or something like that because we made this claim. Listen, we've been saying this. I've been saying this all the way back to my time. If you want to call into the show, you can call in. But a lot of you guys are cowards, personally. That's what I think. That's how I'm going to send you guys out on the weekend. How about that? Cowards. Sean's like, don't stop, dude. Stop doing it.
Well, I'm like, come on. We got a hard out
here. Oh, yeah, that's true. Hey, guys, thank you so much for tuning in on the Twitch. Texters, callers, tweeters as well. So long. Farewell. Have yourselves a wonderful weekend. The Killer Bees are up next. Peace.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Wheel. Fun.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Sports. ESPN 97.5.